Okay, last time we began discussing the mitzvah of Kabbalah Skerim and the tension we have, or the two approaches, both of which have legitimacy and need to be executed in conjunction of Dechia and of encouragement of Kabbalah. Are there situations in which the Dechia element is further minimized, where to the extent that there is an initial orientation of Dechia, we don't emphasize that Dechia as much? So there are some armakamos that indicate, despite the sapachas approach, or the sapachas concern, that, at least under certain circumstances, gerim should be accepted, aside from the Timna model we discussed last time. For example, Gemara Misachim Daf Pezayin Mabez has a name of her blazer, the Logol Yisrael, Elik Kadeshi Tosil Leim Gerim, that the purpose of Gola, the son's unlovable, is in order to attract Gerim. There's a comment of the Ibn Ezra in the Parsha of Hakel, Zvarim Lama Beis. Often, there are a number of instances in which the Torah is Marbel Ger, in a list of people who are Muchiv or something. So every time you have to figure out what's the purpose of the Ribui, what's the Havamina, that a Ger would have been excluded. So usually Ger is assumed to mean Ger Tzedek, a convert. The Ibn Ezra, in a number of places, understands that ger often means a ger toshav, not a ger tzedek, a non-Jew who lives b'shalom in Eretz Yisrael and agrees to accept b'shalom and mitzvah b'nei Noach, ger toshav. So he understands that gercha in the parsha of Hakel also refers to a ger toshav, a ger shev recha, that the ger also is included in Hakel, has to come for Hakel. So the Ibn Ezra writes, a gerish of Rigarecha, two words, Ulay Yis Yahed. Maybe he will become Jewish, maybe he'll be inspired to convert. So at least in the context of a Ger Toshav, Ibn Ezra seems to imply that there's some interest in being Megayer Ger Toshav. But be that as it may, are there situations where the Dechia element is minimized? So there is a correspondence between Rav Hirsch Kalischer and Rav Israel Hildesheimer in the mid-1800s, that was spurred by an inquiry sent by Rabbi Dr. Bernardi Lowy, who at the time was a Rav in New Orleans. Rabbi Lowy, fascinating historical figure, was the Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. He also had a doctorate in philosophy from the University of Budapest, which is not something that most of the Chassam Sofer Talmidim could say. And apparently he was caught on the wrong side of the revolutions of 1848. He was found to have currency of the insurgency, and he had to leave Hungary, so he ended up in America. So he was a rav in a number of kehilos, I believe in Rochester initially, and then he was in Baltimore. He was in Baltimore towards the beginning of the Civil War, and he gave such a stark secessionist Russia that he was hired by New Orleans in the Deep South to be their rav. So he was in New Orleans by 1861. Then New Orleans was the first southern city to fall to the North, and by the time Lincoln was assassinated, he gave a very nice testament for Lincoln. And then he ended up in Cincinnati, buried in Cincinnati. So he was one of, if not the first, real, serious Talmid Chacham who was a member of the American rabbinate. So he corresponded, his son put out his ksavim, he would write in the American newspapers, like the Occident or Israelite, and he would correspond with Gedolim in Europe, like Rezir Shkalasher, Rezir Hildesheimer, Sham Shadafral Hirsch, Rabbi Nathan Avlin, chief rabbi of the United Kingdom. So, one of his correspondences had to do with the situation that he was facing in New Orleans, where there was rampant intermarriage, and there were many couples where the Jewish father is married to a non-Jewish woman who had no havamina of converting, they know havamina of living an observant lifestyle, but they wanted the kid to have a milah. So Rabbi Lowy issued a proclamation that the Mohel in town are not allowed to be mal the children of these intermarried couples where there's no havamina of geiros. And two of the Mohelim listened to him, one of the Mohelim didn't listen to him. There was a whole tumult in the American Jewish press. And he sent the shalat to Europe for their input. So this was the impetus for a correspondence between Rabbi Hirsch Kalischer, the Drisha Sion, and Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer on this very topic. This back and forth is printed in the Tshuvas of Israel Hildesheimer, Tshuvas of Israel Simon Reish Kaf Test to Reish Lamed Beis, Reish Kaf Test to Reish Lamed Beis, and if you look at it inside, look specifically at Reish Kaf Test Os Yud Ches and Reish Lamed Os Yud Ches. So one of the main subjects of dispute in this exchange of tshuvas is whether there's any special status to the child of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother. So we believe in matrilineal descent, that the child of a Jewish mother, a Jewish father, and non-Jewish mother is not halachically Jewish, but is there something of Jewishness in the child? So one of the points of contention is whether the interpretation of the pasuk in Ezra of Zeri Yisrael is a reference to the product of intermarriage that was rampant in the time of Ezra Nehemiah. So according to Israel Hildesheimer, according to Rafir Shkalashir, Zeri Yisrael meant Jewish seed, meaning the progeny of a Jewish father and non-Jewish mother, still referred to as Zeri Yisrael, literally Jewish seed, for the Zera of the father. And that's the title of the work that was put out a few years ago by the former Chavir Knesset of Shas, Rabbi Amsalem, who wrote this whole work, Zeri Yisrael, which we'll talk about when we get to the Sugya of Kabbalah Samitzvos, arguing that no one really requires Kabbalah Samitzvos for Geiros, and we don't need such exacting standards. So he called that Sefer Zeri Yisrael based on this. I think he was writing on Feiglin's party in the recent elections that didn't pass the threshold. Anyway, and then Rabbi Zvi Hildesheimer said, no, Zeri Yisrael means that the Zeri Yisrael is referring to the Jewish father in that case, not to the progeny in that pasuk. But in any event, so part of their machlokas is they're arguing whether it's prudent or whether one would be allowed to give a milah to the child of the Jewish father and non-Jewish father if there's no gerus in the cards. So that was the main point of contention of the Maisa. So even though we generally assume, as far as that goes, like the position of Rabbi Zvi Hildesheimer, that we don't do a gerus unless there's, we don't do a milah unless there's a gerus process associated with it. We'll talk about that when we get to milah. But nevertheless, there is a certain orientation away from dechia that but they didn't have when you're dealing with someone with a Jewish identity, with Jewish background. So if someone comes to express an interest in Geirus, sincerely express an interest in Geirus, and they have a Jewish father, so even though they're not halachically Jewish, but the Dechiyah element may be somewhat minimized in that case, we don't push them off or don't make as valiant an attempt to push them away because there's already some Jewish background in the family. There's a tshuva printed in the second posthumous volume of Igros Moshe, Chelik Tes, Eben Ezra Siman Yudalit, Chelik Tes, Eben Ezra Siman Yudalit, which is dated much earlier, dated in the 60s. There's a brief tshuva written to a rabbi in Rio about a case of a young lady who was holding by getting married. And she had believed to be herself to be halachically Jewish, and then she discovered, as she's already engaged, about to be married to a Jew, that she was in fact not halachically Jewish, that her mother acted Jewish but was a non-Jew and never converted. So the question was whether there should be reluctance to be megayer this young lady who's been living an observant lifestyle for years, who believes herself to be Jewish. Then do we have the same orientation of dechia that you do under normal circumstances? And do you call this l'shem yishus? We'll talk next about the issues involved in being begayer someone for ulterior motives, specifically if someone converts in order to marry a Jew. So in this case, do you view this as a geirus l'shem yishus, where technically speaking, a woman is not Jewish and she wants to marry a Jew, even though she believed herself to always be Jewish, and the came as a shakter that she's not halachically Jewish. So in this tshuva in Igros Moshe, he responds that no, this isn't considered to be l'shem ishus, this is l'shem shemayim, and she believes herself to be Jewish until now. This is not considered geirus l'shem davar, and therefore you should facilitate the geirus, and that is the appropriate thing to do. So again, they didn't have such an orientation when it comes to people who believe themselves to be Jewish, even if they're not halachically Jewish, all the more so someone who is, let's say, Suffolk Jewish. You have a situation where someone underwent, or the mother underwent, a questionable conversion. You can't say for sure that the geirus wasn't good, but you can't say for sure that the geirus was good. So that situation, the person is a Suffolk. That's the worst situation to be in. So especially in that kind of case, the orientation should be you want to solve the Suffolk. So if the person is sincerely interested in Geirus and willing to go through a proper halacha geirus with proper kabbalas and mitzvahs, so then you should facilitate a geirus in that situation. There is a call it kiruv impediment in that kind of a case to bring them towards geirus, because that solves a situation of safek. Even where there's no safek, the person's definitely not Jewish but had a Jewish father, then there's one to talk about that the orientation of dechia may be somewhat diminished because of the Jewish identity that the person has. Okay. In Evan Ezra Simon Dalid, we discuss the various classes of individuals whose marriage eligibility is restricted. So we have, for example, beginning with Sifes and Simon Dalid Evan Ezra. Amoni mo avi asur and visur and isur olam of alnika vasei mutaras miyad. Right? Amoni below amonia, mo avi below mo avia. So there's an isur olam. You can never marry a amoni mo avi convert, but a female convert you're allowed to marry. That was Rus. Sifkemo misi vadomi enam asur me'elash lo shadoros. So then you have a din of misri shlishi, misri sheni, misri shlishi. That you can't marry a misri or domi convert until the third generation. That applies both to Zacharim and the Kevos. So Misri Sheni is a second generation Misri, his father converted. A Misri Shlishi is Mutter, is a third generation Misri Ardomi, whose grandfather converted. Okay, so the Piskei Tshuva references Tshuva of the Yavis of Yaakov Emden, Chelek Al Simen Mem Vav. We discuss is, we assume, in general, definitely when it comes to Amoni Moavi, Basan Chayim and Bilbo call it Umos. We don't know who's a real Amoni anymore, we don't know who's a real Moavi anymore, everyone is mixed together, so there are no restrictions, you don't have to be kosher that someone's an Amoni or Moavi. Rabbi Yaakov Emden discusses, what's the status of the Italians that live around Rome? Maybe those are the real Adomis, the descendants of the real Adomis, because they've been there for centuries, and maybe they weren't subject to the bilbul of Sancheirov. So he discusses whether there should be any impediment to allowing a Italian ger to marry freely and not have to wait till Dor Shlishi. He raises that as a question. L'maisa, we're not really concerned about the potential Adomi status of someone living in Italy, Bismanasan. More interesting is the status and the ability to be Megayir and Amaleki, if you're able to identify an Amaleki. So there's a Mechilta de Rashbi in Parshas Beshalach that has as follows. Kiyal Heska. The Mechilta says, Reb Lazar Mudayam Omer, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shem Yavo Mikol Umos Esgayir Yikablu Mehem. If any nation comes and wants to be Megayir, you can accept a Geir. Aside from if any nation comes to be Megayir, you can accept the Geirim of any nation. However. But you're not allowed to accept the ger Amaleki. Right? David says to the Nar Amaleki, where do you come from? What's your nationality? And don't remember this din that you're not allowed to be kabbal a ger maliki. Vayomer elav David, dam chal rosha, al roshacha, ki picha, spoke against you. Okay, so the Mechilta de Rashbi seems to say, says very clearly, that you're not allowed to be kabbal a ger amaleki. Everyone asks, what about the Gemara said, Hedrin Sadivav, the Nebanav Shal Haman, Lamdu Torah b'Bnei Brak. So Haman, we assume, was Amaleki, and his grandchildren were living Torah b'Nei Brak. How did that happen if you can't be Mekabel, a ger, Amaleki? Yep. And for that matter, left side on the pasuk in Megillah, Ve'adim Me'amei Aretz Misyadim. So who were these Amei Aretz Misyadim? Were they Amalekis? Were they other people? That's not such a kasha, because those weren't necessarily the Amalekis. But in that regard, the Gemara in Daf Kafdal and Mebeis has that they were Mekabel Gerim, Lo Bimei David, Velo Bimei Shlomo. They were Mekabel Gerim when the times were good, because we're concerned that people were Megayer for other motivations. The Tosafot here asks, Dibur Mas Velo Bimei David. And number one, the Gemara later on in Ayin Tes says that in the time of David HaMelech, there were 150,000 Gerim. So how does that square with what the Gemara here says, that they weren't Mekabel Gerim, Lo Bimei David, Velo Bimei Shlomo? Says Tosafot here, Shlomar, Dimeatzmen Nisgayru, they were Megayer on their own. We'll have to see what that means. Kedashakan Gabi Mordechai Esther, V'rabim Me'amei Aretz Misyadim. That's shot in the Megillah as well. We should have accepted them either because the times were good, they wanted to be in with the Jews. So no, that also was Me'atzman Nisgayru. It wasn't being Me'atzman Nisgayru, they were Megayer on their own. So the Gaon on Megillah says that they pretended to be Jewish. They conducted themselves like Jews, but they didn't undergo a Gerus process. They acted Jewish. Misyadim, they made themselves into Jewish, but they presented themselves as Jewish. They weren't actually Megayer. The Chachmei Sfard, the Rashba, the Ritva, explain, we'll get to this verse a little bit later, that they were Megayer Bebes and Sheladyotas, that they underwent a second tier conversion with a second tier Bezdin, a Bezdin Shalayotos. We'll have to explain how that works as we go on as well. There's a sefer I just discovered this year, courtesy of Menachem Butler, that entitled Ner Lameya, written by Rabbi Seltzer, which has 100 simanim on this topic of being the Gayer Amalekim and the status of Haman in that regard. I had it in my office, I meant to bring it down, I forgot. So a sefer Ner Lameya has 100 chapters on this topic. So one of the things that he quotes is a chidah who points out that even though we just quoted on the Chilta Mefereshes that you're not allowed to be Megayer Amaleki, the chidah points out that the Rambam did not seem to paskin that way. The Rambam, for example, Isurei Bia, Perek Yudeis, Halacha Yudayin, Isurei Bia, Perek Yudeis, Halacha Yudayin writes as follows. Kol ha'akum kulam kishe yisgayu v'kabla v'leim kol ha'misah shem Torah, etc. So any non-Jew, when he's misgayer and accepts the mitzvahs, this is the process. Chutz midalad amin bilvad, with the exception of Amon Moav, Misri Adomi. Amoni and Moav, you can never marry into the Jewish people. Misri Adomi, as we said, is Dor Shlishi Yavo Heinah. So the Rambam tells you that every nation can convert. The Rambam tells you there are certain restrictions on Adomi, Moavi, Mitzri, Adomi, and that's it. Sounds like, according to the Rambam, there's no restriction on the Megayer and Amaleki. And then he says, you get that impression as well, from Perek Yuchas, Halacha Vav, in Sanhedrin. But there the Rambam's talking about what was the basis, among other things, what was the basis of David's killing the Ger Amaleki. What license did he have to do that? The Rambam quotes that as an example of a Haras Shah. Rambam writes, Perek Yuchas Halacha Vav in Sanhedrin. Hagonet klisharis min amikdash hamakalil b'kosei v'abol aramis ein bezin iskakin lehen ela kanan pogin bohen v'kol sharagaz lacha. So certain violations that could invoke Hanan Pogenbo, even though it doesn't fit in any formal Misas Bezdin. And then the Rambam goes on, says, even though in general you're not allowed to kill anyone without Edus of two Edim, So if that's the case, that in the Mitzvah of Rasha, and you can't kill someone for a capital crime without proper due process, without to aid him. So how is it that Yeshua is allowed to kill Achan? How is it that David is allowed to kill the Ger Maliki? Haras Shah Haisa Odin Ma'akus Hayas. Either it was Haras Shah, the Midr Milsa, or Odin Melech. So David was killing him, the Taurus Melech. Aval Sanhedrin, Ein Mamisin Velo Malkin, Hamod Bavera, Shemin Nidifa Daita Vidavrezev. But that's only Odin Melech, Haras Shah. In general, Sanhedrin is not allowed to kill someone based on their own self-representation. So it sounds like the Rambam says the Chidah, that the Geirus was a good Geirus. There's no issue with the Geirus of an Amaleki. Had there been an issue with the Geirus of an Amaleki, so then we're not subject to Dina Yisrael of Eidus to kill someone. So that, together with the first Rambam, the says called Akum, Hishayis Geirus, without restriction, sounds like the Rambam doesn't hold it as Matholta. According to the Rambam, there's no restriction on being the Geir and Amaleki.
But are you deserving the death penalty if you're a guy? If it was indeed, I mean, that would be the death penalty if it was
No, he deserved the death penalty for killing Shaul.
Yeah.
But if he's a Jew, then he's subject to due process. That doesn't apply, the standards of Aedis don't apply to Nochri. Yeah. The Klechemda in Parsha Shoftim, Osvav, has a different suggestion to deal with this issue, that once someone's nisgayer, so Gerish and nisgayer could cut them to Nola Dami, and he's no longer Mizera Malik. So even, there's potentially two issues. Number one, are you allowed to nisgayer a Ger Maliki? If you're not, does that mean the Gerish is a Chal? Or maybe there's an issue doing it, but the Gerish will be Chal. If the Gerish is Chal, one way or another, Gerish is Karka the Shinol Adam. He's not considered Mizera Amalek anymore. Then he points out, the Klei Tamid, fascinatingly, that Haman, we know from the Gemara Megillah Tesvav, was an Eved of Mordechai. Right? Haman was initially Mordechai's Eved. What does that mean? So Klei Tamid says, means he was an Eved Kanani. If it's an Eved Kanani, some Mordechai took him as an Eved Kanani in a halachically appropriate fashion, meaning he had mila tefila, he was mechuyav mitzvos keisha. So Haman became a Jewish Eved Kanani, and he had the halachic status of an Eved Kanani mechuyav mitzvos keisha, and at some point he ditched that. So according to that, Haman was basically Jewish. Then he has some interesting cheshbon about what basis Mordechai was allowed to kill Haman, if that was the case, if he really wasn't an Amaleki anymore. Then the Sefer Ner Lameya quotes the Simi Yud Gimel, Chasam Sofer, in the Torah Moshe.
You can kill someone like that. Sorry? Someone like that, regardless of their racial or religious background, there's no problem killing someone like that. No,
he's saying a rodef.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
You're allowed.
Right. So yes, it's question of whether the din, the ikar din, the parsha of Shaul, is there a chiyuv l'doros killing the animals of a maliki or not? Was that only specific to that time? And the Eved Kanani may have been an animal. Maybe that's a machlokas. Maybe so he has a fascinating cheshbon there, but not for now. So that's say for Ner Lameir, the Seltzer, and the Simi Yud Gimel goes to Chasam Sofer, which I couldn't find inside. He says it's a Chasam Sofer in Torah Moshe, and it's Perish al Chumash, and pieces on the Megillah there too. I looked in a few places I didn't expect to find it, I couldn't find it. But he claims that along these lines of the argument of the Klei Chemda, that Haman was in fact Jewish, at least an Eved Kanani kind of Jewish, that Pshat in the Pasuk of Ki Gila HaMashiri Hu Yehudi, that everyone waited to see what would happen if Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman, Ki Gila HaMashiri Hu Yehudi. It's not Pshat because they told him that Mordechai was Jewish, But Kegel HaMasher Yehudi, he told him that Haman was Jewish. So what are you Haman bothering Mordechai for, that he's Jewish? You're also Jewish. Then finally, there's a comment of the Emek Bracha of Pomeranchenk. In his little piece on the Chiyas HaMalek, that the din is that you're not mekabel geir men HaMalek lechachila, but once you're mekabel, then the geir is hischal. You can't be mekabel geir HaMalek because you're mevatel the mitzvah of Chiyas HaMalek. But once you are mekabel geir HaMalek, he said now he's Jewish, so there's no mitzvah of Chiyas HaMalek anymore, you're mevatel la mitzvah, but the geir is hischal. And David didn't believe the Ger Amaleki because he didn't believe that Abezin actually would have accepted a Ger Amaleki. Okay, other approaches to this as well, but this is kind of tangential to our main focuses. Okay, now let's begin the sugya of Gerus Hashem Davar Acher, Gerus Hashem Ishas, and Nita. The Mishnah says, on Kaftala the base in Nitan. Yes. Right. Vishnu says on Kaftala of the base in Yavamas, the Zanamar Gamas. Hanitan al Hashifcha Vinishtachara. If someone's Chashud, Hanitan will lessen Taina, that people Taina on him that he's engaged in a relationship with a certain Shifcha. Rashi Hanitan Chashud Klomar, Shatoinim alav Dibelaz, that people are tumulting, people are gossiping, that this fellow has a relationship with a certain shifcha, vinishachra, and then that shifcha is freed. O al ha'avedes kochavin vinishachra, or they're tumulting that he has a relationship with a certain non-Jewish woman, and then she converts. Hareiz elo yechnos, he's not allowed to marry her. Yem kanas, ein motzim miyado, but if he does, ein motzim. Okay, says the Gemara, so the Mishnah tells us that by a nita, you're not allowed to marry her. But the Geirus is still chal. Erimini, Echad Ish and Iskayra Lishem Isha, the Echad Ish and Iskayra Lishem Ish. So if someone converts to marry a Jew, the Chem Ish and Iskayra Lishem Shulchan Lachim, or someone converts in order to benefit from the royal Jewish table, l'shem Abish Shlomo, or to be part of the entourage of Shlomo Melech, those who have some authority in the court of Shlomo Melech, einam geirim divrim nechemya. According to nechemya, if you convert for ulterior motivations, as either l'shem ishus or for the financial benefit of being a well-positioned Jew, according to Rabbi Nechemya, Geri says Nechal. Shai Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Echa Geri Arayos, V'echa Geri Chalomos, V'echa Geri Mordechai V'Esther, Einam Gerim, Ashish Gairu Bizman Azeh. Nechemya said, Geri Arayos, those the Kusim, were Megair because they were afraid of the lions, Geri Chalomos, people who had a dream that they should convert, Geri Mordechai V'Esther, Rabbim Meimeris V'Siyadim, not chal, as he's got his manazet, until I'm a guy now. It's manazet, that's like that, what does that mean? Alayim is manazet. I mean, he's only got chal if they're a guy in a kind of socio-economic situation that mirrors our current plight. So if there's no financial incentive to be Jewish, as was the case in 4th century Babel, then that's a good gerus. Okay, the Gemara continues, the Emor law. Army of Yisrael Shmuel, Bar which made the Rav, Halacha Kidabi Omer, Kulam Gerim Heim. We paskin against Rav Nechemya, we paskin against Chachamim, that even if Lechachila, you shouldn't be Megayer Saman, Lashem Davar Acher, but the Eved, the Geirus is Chal. He hafi Lechachila Nami. So then why is not Geirus good even Lechachila? Sorry, why in our Mishnah is Hareza Liyichnas of Lechachila? If the Geirus is good, so then why can't you marry her after she's misguided? Why can't the Nitan al Ha'aventus Chavim Niskaira, why can't he marry this woman who underwent a valid, at least post facto, gerus? Mishum deravasi, damravasi, hasem imcha ikshepe, velazus vasayim. So there's a certain lazus vasayim, a certain tumult, gossiping, that's going to be engendered by entering into that relationship, and to do so is a violation of this cautionary note of avoiding ikshus peh velazus svasai. So we'll have to discuss the various issues that this Gemara raises. Number one, the status of geirus l'shem ishus or l'shem davar l'chachil v'di'evet. Number two, what the real concern of nitan is, what's the lazus svasai concern, and how does that apply l'maisa. Now, just by introduction, the whole discussion here presupposes that we're talking about a geirus that's done with proper protocol and with proper Kabbalah Samitzvahs, as we'll discuss the role of Kabbalah Samitzvahs in the geirus process. We're talking about a geirus that was done properly. The ger of geirus is properly Mekabel Mitzvahs, is living a properly observant lifestyle. Achal Pikein, and the Chaim says, because of the ulterior motivation, the geirus is no good even to the Eved, and Chachamim say, kulam geirim hei. We're not talking about a case where there's a flaw in the geirus objectively itself. So what is this concern of being the geir l'shem davar, where at the end of the day, the geirus is done properly, and the person becomes properly observant? So in the Sefer Geirus Gilchasar, Shtern from Nebrach, in the beginning, he quotes a tshuva of Shlomo Eger. Tshuva of Shlomo Eger, Yoredeya Simen Lama Dalit, who points out that the Isser of the Mekabel Ager, who's Megayah Vashem Dabaracher, according to Nechemya, the Gavis is a good Yisrael Yavid, according to Chachamim, the Nisra Chachila, the Yavid Kulam Gerim Haim, that Isser, he says, clearly not a Nisra Daraisa. There's no pasuk to point to that indicates you're not allowed to be Megayer someone who comes with an ulterior motivation. You think there's a pasuk?
I'll have to go through all the psukim to make things deraisa.
You don't need psukim to make things deraisa, but you need some kind of indication that it's deraisa. You can't just say you're wrong that something's in deraisa. He thinks that it's direct kabbal. But the Sefer Geirus Gilchasar does point out that there's a comment of Agos Maimoni in Siman Kuf Yud here in Yavamos. Agos Maimoni has a line.
I'm sorry.
He's saying it's not the Raisa. It's not even the Rabbanan. It's Divrei Kabbalah.
What does that mean?
What does Divrei Kabbalah mean?
Kabbalah
means there's an indication from the Navi. Maybe. Sometimes that's what Divrei Kabbalah means. Like he points out, the Gemara raises the issue in the context of Shlomo Melech and Bas Paro, that Shlomo should have been Megayer Bas Paro.
So
Divrei Kabbalah, so maybe there's an indication in the Navi that it's not right. But it's not no Pesukim, it's not an Issa Deraisa. So what's the difference between that and the Rabbanan? So Divrei Kabbalah sometimes is stronger than the Rabbanan. But Divrei Kabbalah, if there's an indication, let's say the Pesukim in Yechezkel that talk about the details of Avelis, if that's the Divrei Kabbalah. So Divrei Kabbalah could be stronger than regular Rabbanan. The Rabbanan could be exer the Rabbanan that the Tanan came up with. Divrei Kabbalah's source is in the Nabi. The Mordechai has a line in Siman Kuf Yud. Mordechai has a line that Alma Lehedya Min HaTorah Shetzarech Liyos Batuach Shesofo Yiyya L'Shem Shamayim. even though min haTorah could be lav dafka. He's not quoting a pasuk, so it could be min haTorah is lav dafka even in the Agos Mordechai. But either way, the Gemara doesn't tell you clearly what the chisaron is in Geirus L'Shem Dami. Even the Rishonim, it's not so clear what the chisaron is. So in Svara, it would seem that the concern about Geirus L'Shem Davar, which according to the Chami will make it invalid even b'di'evet, but it, then according to the Chachamim that it's a l'chachila consideration, it would seem the concern is that where Geirus is done for ulterior motivation, even if you're going to do all the bedika that you're able to do. By the way, the Beis Yitzchak I quoted last time, that was Medayik and the Lashon of Bokin Achrav. I wasn't sure where that was from. That's from the Lashon Mechaber. Not in the Rambam, not in the Gemara. The Lashon in Shulchan Aruch is Bokin Achrav. Okay. But even if you're going to do all the proper bedikos, there's still a concern that maybe there's going to be a deficiency in the Kabbalah Samissus, a deficiency in the Geirus, because of the ulterior motivation that prompted the Geirus to begin with. That's the impression you get from the Ritva and the Nemuka Yosef. The Ritva here on Kaftal and Mebeis in Yavamas, the Nemuka Yosef is Dapei Mebeis with Dapei Rif on the bottom. We'll read you a couple lines from the Ritva. Halacha kulam Geirim heim. So we pass against Rav Nechemya that even a Geirus for ulterior motivations is going to be Chau Bidi Eved. So the Ritva quotes, V'hikshu b'tosfas. Kevin de geri arayis gerim heim l'rabbanan. Lama amr shem kegayim. Laman amr geri arayis heim. So that's that opinion in Tanoim that geri arayis aren't valid gerim, those who are megayir because of the fear of the lions, the kusim. So if according to Chacham kulam gerim heim, why wasn't that gerim good b'di evet as well? V'tir tzu. The Shani Hasam, Shakasav Omer Leyam, Es Elohim, Ayu Abdim, Lomer Shalodis Gari Belev Shalim, the Olam Belo Kivlo Leyam. So, no, they held that the Kusim were worse. The Kusim is not just that they had ulterior motivations. Had they had ulterior motivations, but they would have been totally with the program and living from lifestyles and believing in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that would be fine. The problem was that they never abandoned their idolatry. So there wasn't a proper Kabbalah Samissus. They weren't, they didn't, it was lacking in the follow-up. It was lacking in the Kabbalah at the time of the Geirus. That's why Geri Arayis was no good. But in a Chanami, if they would have been Geri Arayis, if the motivation would have been the Arayis, but they would have been properly observant in the Kabbalah Samissus after the Geirus, then that would be a good Geirus. The Ritva continues, Umadim Ashur Hasam Savar Din Iskari Belef Shalem Elisha Chazul Asurim. And the other day in Tanoim, that Geri Arayos are good Geirim, they held that initially, in the years after the Geirus, they were probably observant, they abandoned the idols, and they were living from lifestyles. Then they were Chazul Asurim. And then they went back. So the Geirus was good, because at the time of the Geirus, everything was in place. The fact that they later abandoned their observance, so that's like any Jew who stops being observant, he's still halakhically Jewish. So that's scary rice. Then the Ritva says, Aval Hacha came into the Skyru, the Kiblu Aleyam, but in our case, by a regular Geirus L'Shem Davar, Geirus L'Shem Isha, someone who converts to ulterior motivation, where he's Misgayer, and he's properly Mekabel Mitzvos, Chazaka Hu, the Agav Unsayu, Gamru V'Kiblu. The Chazaka is, the presumption is, that because of the pressure that forced them to be Megayer. Let's say the case of the Shem Ishus, the person wants to marry a Jew, and the only way to marry a Jew is to be Megayer and to do everything that entails, including living an observant lifestyle. So because of the context and the pressure, Gamer V'Kiblu, to live a proper lifestyle as an observant Jew. The Achel Gav de Machmas Ha'ones Hava Geirusu Aliba de Rabbanan. But even though the initial impetus is an ones, but the geirus is good. So it sounds like, in the Ritva, that the reason that's only a b'di'evet, the reason according to Chachamim that we're not in the kabel geirus l'shem davar achrav l'chachila, is that you don't want to rely on agav and sayyid gavav v'kiblu. Maybe we're choshesh that he wasn't properly mekabel mitzvos. if push comes to shove, you have right to assume that you're ready to do the geiris. You have the right to assume that Agav and Sayyid govern v'kiblu because of the context involved and the societal pressure that in order to marry a Jew, you'd have to conform with the societal norms and live an observant lifestyle, so then you have the right to assume that that was all in place. But l'chachila, maybe not. L'chachila, we're not going to rely on that chazaka, and that's a concern why you wouldn't be megayir someone with shem ishas l'chachila.
How do we understand the language of inside? What kind of onus are we talking about over here?
The onus of wanting to marry the Jew.
The person can't change that. In other words,
we'll see this in a moment in the Achronim that discusses this. But because of the pressure of society that in order to marry a Jew you have to be Jewish and conduct yourself accordingly. So Agav and Sayyid Gavim Kibbutz, because of that onus to put yourself in that situation, we want to marry this woman, let's say, then Gavim Kibbutz.
I mean, the onus of it, I mean, he could always change his desire for the marriage. I mean, it's not, a person has Bechira, it's not a woman putting a gun to his head and saying, marry.
Okay, because he feels that he wants to marry this girl. So then that creates a certain societal pressure to conform.
I mean, he feels the societal pressure.
Right, he feels the societal pressure.
I mean, we usually understand onus in those terms. In other words, if a desire is within human bechira to change,
right.
You can desire this, you can desire that.
Okay.
Once you desire one thing, doesn't mean you're it's mukhach, you have to continue, you can always change your mind. We accept that as normal psychology, Judaism, but the word onus over here has been used in a new way. He feels
okay.
Pressure, he
right.
Wants to marry this woman,
right.
So he...
Yeah, mm-hmm. So he'll do what's necessary in order to do that. But this is a subject to a dispute between Reb Chaim Ozer and the Dvar Avraham Kavna Rav about, we'll talk a little bit about this more, probably more next time, about the status of people who want to convert L'Shem Ishus Bizman Hazeh in the years right before the war. And these children from the 20s and 30s. Till then, you almost never had Geirus in any significant way in Europe. Until the ghetto walls came crumbling down, until way after the Enlightenment, instances of geiris in Europe were few and far between. If you look in the tshuva literature, in the early achronim, there are very few references to any geiris in any meaningful way. And geiris in most of Europe was illegal until well into the 19th century, even in England. Geirus was only, conversion to Judaism was only legalized well into the 19th century.
Legalized or dis-illegalized?
Maybe dis-illegalized. Someone had a nice study of the Kuntres, the Pincus rather, the London Besdin, from I think 1805 to 1855 or thereabouts. And what emerged from the records of the London Besdin in the first half of the 19th century was because it was illegal to perform conversion in the United Kingdom, in England, the only two situations in which they would do geiris were either if there's a Jewish father. If there's a Jewish father, they argue that even though we don't recognize the child as Jewish, but by Dina de Malchusa, they would be considered Jewish because of the Jewish father, and therefore wasn't a violation of Dina de Malchusa to be Megayer the kid. Or in a situation in which they thought geiris was in order, but they were reluctant to perform it because it was illegal, they would send the conversion candidate to Amsterdam, where conversion was legal, but they wouldn't accept the geiris from Amsterdam because they didn't trust the Besdin there and didn't rely on it. So when they came back to London, they do a gir l'chumra. So al tina de Balchusa, they assumed that the first geiris was good enough for the queen, but it wasn't good enough for them, but they thought it wasn't a violation of dina Balchusa to do another geiris. Rabbi Lowy, we mentioned a little while ago, so one of his tshuvas in the collected writings that his son put out was about a woman who was in Nashville in the 1850s, who originally came from Europe. Then the non-Jewish woman was living with a Jewish guy in Nashville, and they became more interested in religion and observance, and she wanted to convert. So at some point they were back in Europe, and she was looking to convert in Europe, but they couldn't find anyone to convert it because it was illegal where they were. They were, I think, in Sovereign Belgium, Holland, remember? So conversion there was illegal, so they sent her to some small town where the rabbis were willing to do a geirus, but they wouldn't give her any document because they didn't want any paper trail that they were violating the Dina de Malchusa. So then they came back to America, they lived happily ever after, and when this woman passed away, she wanted to be buried with Kruis Yisrael. But the Chevra Kedisha wasn't willing to bury her because she had no proof that she was Megayer, because the Beth in Europe wouldn't give her a certificate because they didn't want to contravene the civil law ban on conversion. So that's what Rabbi Lowy discussed in the Tshuva. My point is that that Geirus only really became relevant in any meaningful way towards the beginning of the 20th century. Yeah?
Why does it matter that's illegal? Why don't they just do it anymore?
It sounds like they were concerned that they could be prosecuted or penalized for violating.
They have some sort of chiyuv to, if they want to convert.
So that was our... That was the issue we discussed last time. What's the nature of a chiyuv kabbalas geirus? But do you have to do it on your cheshbon?
It's not a danger on your life.
It may be a danger on your organization, meaning if they're going to put your bezin out of business and you won't be able to service a broader population, then especially if you could direct them somewhere else. The London bezin didn't say there's no solution. They sent them to Amsterdam and then they came back. And this bezin in whatever country it was Megayer, they just wouldn't give her the paper. Okay. So anyway, back to the machlokes of Chaim Moser and Dvar Avram. So again, the whole discussion that we're talking about here is where you have someone who's Megayer v'shem Ishus, but they're going to be properly observant, even though the motivation is v'shem Ishus, but they're going to commit to living a properly observant lifestyle with full Kabbalah Samitzah. So the question is, in that case, where you know what the motivation is, the motivation is the Shem Ishus, but the person says that my interest is to convert sincerely. So Chaim Moser writes, their future was the Chela Gimel of the Achiezer beginning in Simon Kavav. So he writes in Chela Gimel, Simon Kavav, Os Gimel, based on this Ritva, that even though there's an Umdun de Muchach, that the real motivation is the Shem Ishus. The person is being Megayer in order to marry a Jew. But because of the Ritvas, Agav Unse, Gamar, or Mekadel, so that creates an Umdana that his Kavana is a sincere Kavana. So that Umdana of Agav Unse trumps the context, trumps the fact that we have knowledge that there's an ulterior motivation here. So even if at the end of the day he's really not converting sincerely, but that's Dvarim Shevalev, and Dvarim Shevalev Eilim Dvarim, where it goes against a stronger Umdana. So the Agav Unse Gamar Kavu creates an Umdana that the Geirus is good, that he has proper motivation, that Agav Unse, he's government Makabal Belev Shalem, and even if there may be ulterior motivations, those ulterior motivations are Dvarim Shebelev. That's what Chaim Moser's argument. And the Kavna Rav, Dvar Avram, Chela Gimel Simen Kavches, easy to remember because the Achiezer is Chela Gimel Simen Kavches through Kavches, and Dvar Avram is also Chela Gimel Simen Kavches. So Dvar Avram writes that the Ritva's Agav Unse Gamar Kibol made sense b'shanim kamonim. There was a time where things were kitikunam and the kehila structure was in place, and in order to marry a Jew you needed to conform to the societal norms and the communal norms. And communal norms meant full observance. So if you wanted to marry a Jew, you had to buy into what all the Jews were doing, which included full shmiras hamitzvos. But nowadays, that's not the case anymore. Nowadays, there are plenty of people who have no inhibition about living a non-observant lifestyle. So the Dvar Avraham argued that Agav Unse Gamar Kibol isn't relevant anymore. Now, you need to know for sure that the person is b'megayer l'shem shamayim. And you don't say Dvarim Shevalev Eino Dvarim, you have to ascertain for sure that the person is properly motivated. Okay, so that in a nutshell is the machlokas between Reb Chaim Ozer and the Dvar Avraham. It's in a case where we know the person is going to be observant, but there are still ulterior motivations. Are we concerned by the ulterior motivations? And we'll come back to this probably tomorrow. Now, just to take a step back before we come back to this, we noted earlier that Tosfos here on Katalim and Beis, Yimas Lovi May David, was bothered by how could it be that there are Gerim, 150,000 Gerim in the time of David HaMelech, how could it be that Rabin May Me'aris Mesiyadim? So Tosfos answers both in the David HaMelech context and in the Megillah context that these people were Me'atman Nisgari, they did it on their own. So we quoted before the Gaon who says they did it on their own means that they were conducting themselves as Jewish, pretending to be Jewish, but there was no gerus whatsoever. There was no actual gear. The Manos HaLevi in the Parashat of the Megillah says along those lines that they dressed Jewish. The Sfasetta says this is a source for the minhag of costumes on Purim. And then Tosa says, so again, first Tosa says, then they asked them in this guy room, they did it on their own. The Yesh Svarim Shekasa Behen, Lo Kiblu Geirim, Lo Bimei Dabu Bimei Shlomo, Elishinasu Geirim Geruim. They were Geirim Geruim. What are Geirim Geruim? Substandard Geirim. So hold on to that for a moment. The Ritva and Ayin Tesamid Aleph in Yavamas, that's what the Gemara says, that 150,000 Geirim were Megayer in the time of David HaMelech. The Ritva and the Rashba write that these people are Megayer b'Bezdin Shel Hedyotos. What's Bezdin Shel Hedyotos? So that's like what the Rambam writes in the beginning, in the end of Perek Yud Gimel of Yisurei Bia. Yud Gimel Yisurei Bia. Halacha Yudalev. Al Yala Dazko, famous Rambam, Shashimshon and Moshiach Yisrael, or Shlomo Melch Yisrael, Shinigri, Yidid Hashem, Nasin Hashem, Nachrios, Vigi Yusan, Chas Vashalom, to say that Shimshon Shlomo Melch married non Jews who didn't convert. Al Asoda Dorakaku, Shamisva Nachona, Kishiyavo, Agera, Giyavos, Eskayer, Bokin Achrov, etc. As he said yesterday, Tesvav lefikach lo kibbutz bez din geirim klamei David Shlomo, because of the ulterior motivations. I'm skipping a little. V'yafal pikein hayu geirim harbe misgayim bimei David Shlomo b'fnei adyotos. Hayu bez din agad l'choshishem lahem lo dochen asan acher shetavu b'kal makam on the carbon asan as shetei racharisa. So there was geirus that took place not in the official but they did, but in the but bez din shel adyotos. And these geirim were suspect, but they weren't rejected or accepted as she's fire after Yusan. So we'll have to come back to that as we go on to explain the parameters of that as well. That's what we have in Shulchan Aruch as well. Reis HaMechest, if you base, basically Lashon HaRambam, that if someone's Mal V'Tavol V'Shnei Shlosh Yotos, Hareis HaGer, Afila Nodesh HaVishvil Davar Hu Mizgayer, Ho, Mal V'Tavol, Yasa Mechal HaGoyim, the Choshen Lo Ashi's Bar Sekusa. So it could be that Tosis's Geirim Gruim is along these lines as well. Geirim that were done with subpar standards, not little Chafila standards of Nabi Megayer Saman, whose motivations are L'Shem Davar. But the Rambam's Choshen Ad Sheyisbar Sekusa. Okay, I think we have to stop here. Next time, tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll discuss the parameters of Nitan, and then come back to this issue of Geirus HaShem Davar L'Maisa.